This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician. Jimmy hit Austin. My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, coming to you every week from Trinidad World Recording Studios right here in beautiful Fort Worth, Texas. Now, let me tell you what you've been doing all week long. You've been just looking at your iPods, sifting through Facebook friends and MySpace spam from crappy bands you don't even know who they are. You go in the record store, they got a two or three Tim McGraw titles, and that's it, and for $18. And you scratch your head, you say, where is it all headed? What's going on? You hear the same two or three songs on the radio, and you wonder, where do we go for some sort of guidance, some sort of perspective on where music has been and where it may be going? Let me just tell you, you have found that place, the P2 Podcast, where we do, if nothing else, just share our own struggles, our own passions and ambitions about independent music. Folks, we are very privileged today to have a Texas music legend here today. My first real road manager. Now, we've had Blake Walker on before. God bless Blake Walker. Oh, he did his best out there, didn't he?
He did.
He was a great guy to have on the road. A good friend. But let me tell you what.
Great hang.
Jordan Powell is with us today. Jordan Powell is a professional road manager, now working for Miranda Lambert, Grammy Award-winning artist in Nashville, Tennessee. Before that, he was with the great Jack Ingram for a while. Before that, he was with Phil Pritchett and the full band. For how long? 3 years? Two years?
About 2.5, 3 years.
He started with us when he was still in college down there, Texas A&M University. And before that, you'd bounced around a lot of guys. Mm-hmm. Roger Kreger, Chris Wall. How else? Who else did you get started with?
God, man, I don't know if there was anyone around that scene. Maybe Charlie Robinson.
Yeah.
That at one time or another, I wasn't either tuning a guitar for, behind the merch table for, or you know, filling in or something. I mean, you know.
So you were like a freshman in college when you started doing this?
Yes, the second semester of my freshman year, I made a 1.0 my first semester in college. I think I had a C, a D, and two Fs.
Wow.
Giving me a 1.0. And I went home. And, you know, I had learned three chords on the guitar when I was in high school.
Right.
And then just, you know.
Were you really into listening, into music?
Oh, man, absolutely. Okay. I mean, from the time that I can remember. I remember my mom bought Billy Joel, An Innocent Man, this was like 84.
Yeah, right.
And I remember listening every song and just finding the harmony parts and listening to those and hearing everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, all along. And, you know, I went through a phase where some of the stuff I listened to was probably, you know, watered down crap.
Right,
I think
right.
Everybody goes through that,
sure.
Whether it's the 80s hair band phase or whatever it is. But, yeah, always into it. Got to college, you know. Go home for Christmas, and, you know, the first semester in College Station.
Now, what year were you there, starting off at school?
This was fall of 97.
Okay. So, man, so, right at the start of just where all these dudes started.
College Station had every Thursday night, Shadow Canyon had a huge show that John Dixon would put on. So, man, you would see Chris Wall. And the next Thursday, you'd see Roger Kreger. And the next Thursday, you'd see Pat Green. The next Thursday, you'd see Reckless Kelly.
Yeah,
I mean,
Corey Morrow. And
for any of them to have more than 150, 200 people at that point was just a huge
a great
deal.
Show.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this was just people think the Texas music scene has really been around forever, which with Jerry Jeff and Willie and
Towns and yeah.
Yeah, I mean, sure it has, but I mean, we're talking this was the forefront of the explosion of
And you
just,
go back, I think a lot of people don't realize too, and you see those old pictures of Jerry Jeff and George Strait and Towns playing at the old quarter and mm-hmm. Green Hall. Man, a lot of times you can see pictures of, you know, a couple couples on the dance floor in front of the stage, and it becomes obvious, like, man, it didn't wall-to-wall sold out, man.
No.
I mean, this is just some Friday night in 1976. You know, this is just a gig.
Well, you know what? You know? I think those guys, you know, the Robert Earls and the Jerry Jeffs,
right.
Those guys were the ones that took things from being just, oh, we got a band playing tonight so everyone can dance,
right.
To people actually went to hear their songs
and artists,
stand
yeah, right,
in
right.
The standing room is so huge in our scene. Belly up to the stage, cheer for your favorite guy. And that's one of the things that Texas versus, you know, the, you know, typical Nashville country or even, you know, some of the rock acts you go see, man, you're sitting in a chair 20
right,
feet
right,
back
right.
with a big barricade. You don't have that accessibility like you do seeing someone in a bar
right.
with sweat and beer and everything right. dripping down you.
And, man, you always had like, the Texas music deal was always real songwriter. You know,
absolutely.
Going back to Towns and mm-hmm. Guy Clark. And, of course, they lived in Nashville. They lived all over, you know what I mean?
Sure.
So it wasn't really... Yeah, but really with Keane and guys like that were guys that, Keane lived in Nashville for a time.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, guys that were not going anywhere, that lived there, that played there, that wrote songs, that would and were not only playing singer-songwriter type venues on a stool where everybody was quiet, the songwriter deal. You know, Keane was maybe one of the first guys that in the modern age of Texas music who... Manny, yes, known as a songwriter, but then could also really, you know, kick it out and get people cheering. I mean, that's kind of unique.
Put on
Willie could do that. I mean, he was known as a songwriter and also through the big live show. But for a long time, you kind of had the party bands and cover bands and dance bands. Then you kind of had the songwriter guys over here. And
mm-hmm.
Keane was kind of bringing those guests, some of these other guys. So
yeah, he kind of blended it all together because, you know, I mean, maybe back in 79, you know, going to see Willie, it might have just been a great show and the band might have been super tight.
Yeah.
But, you know, since I've been a sophomore, junior in high school and been a Willie Nelson fan, man, you go see Willie and it's like, you know, Bobby's on the piano. She's kind of playing a little bit, you know.
Well,
Paul's back there
yeah.
just playing a snare drum and Willie just solos when he wants to. And, man, you know, it's fun to go see.
Right.
And, you know, Jerry Jeff, he had, back in the day, had John Inman and Cosmic Bob
sure.
and Steady Freddy playing. You know, I got to see those guys before they all kind of disbanded. But now you go see them, and it's, you know, they just want to get up. They want to play their show and then, you know, jump in the car and haul ass. And, you know, Keane is still in that point where he's got a great band. And, man, every time I see him, he just gets better and better and better.
Would Keane come play those Thursdays, or was he already too big for that?
He was already too big. He was doing he could go play the hall,
which
held 2,000
in College Station.
And in fact, that was the first place that I saw him was the Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
and then but usually they would bring him twice a semester, and he'd go play Wolfpen.
Right, you know,
so or some special event.
So who was the first of these guys coming to town that roped you into? Carrying their amp up a flight of stairs.
You know, man, actually, Roger Kreger and I met at an open mic night.
Uh-huh.
He had recorded his first record with Lloyd Maines.
Right.
But it was not out yet. It was coming out in, August, I think, of 1998.
Mm-hmm.
Or August of 1999. And hell, I don't know, one of those years.
Right, right.
And we met like in April or May, mm-hmm. playing an open mic night, got to be friends, hung out in College Station a bunch, you know. And at this time, I had the aspirations of, man, I'm going to, you know, if these guys can go play guitar, then sure. surely I can get up and yeah. write a few songs and yeah. play. So Roger and I met. He'd have an occasional gig during the summer. I'd just kind of ride along with him. And then I guess as it came to be fall, he was putting a record out, had a bunch of, I mean, he had a CD release schedule of, you know, 10 or 12 shows right. in the month. And, man, I was kind of getting tired of riding along, and at the end of the night, we wouldn't have a place to stay, or we wouldn't yeah. know what time we needed to be at the next club. We'd wait for the sound man for 2 hours to get there and sound check.
Yeah, yeah,
so,
yeah.
So, you know, one day I was like, hey, man, I'm just going to call this, you know, Motel 6 in Dallas. We're playing Sons of Herman.
Yeah.
It's down the street. Man, I'll just call, and I'm gonna tell him we're going to stay there. He's like, okay, cool. So we'd finish the night. Hey, where are y'all going? We're going to go to the Super 8 or the Motel 6 down here. Y'all come over. And it just made it a little easier.
Next thing you know, you were a road manager.
Next thing I know, man, it's like, hey, you know what? Man, I broke a string. Can you string it? Hey, man, we got T-shirts. We're going to sell T-shirts at the gig. You want to do it? Man, I'll pay you $50.
Yeah, right,
yeah, okay, cool. And it just, you know, that's how it starts.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I tell everyone, I still get people that come up to me, you know, at Miranda shows and go, man, I want to do what you do. How do I do it? And I go, okay, go find a band you like. Commit to working for free for 1 year. And yeah. then at the end of that 1 year, if they're doing okay, they're going to pay you something. Because they're going to see that you're working hard.
Yeah, that's right.
And man,
and not
for the next
leave.
Year, commit to working for $100 a gig.
Right.
And then when that's done, man, if you're lucky, you might be able to find something that can pay your rent or, you know, put a roof over your head or put food on the table.
Road manager is one of those deals that if the everyone thinks they want to do it, and in a couple of weeks, that just wears them out. You know, the next thing you know, you just got some guy drinking all the band's beer, drunk, sleeping under the merch table.
Yep.
That's usually the situation a band like me gets into.
Absolutely.
So it's rare to have someone who's out there really carrying their own weight and is out there running around, hunting down the bar owner at 2:30 in the morning, pulling the van around. Many's the morning I woke up with Jordan Powell coming into my hotel room with a cup of Starbucks, and, you know, he'd already filled up the car with gas and picked up some guitar strings.
Yep. Last and man, one to bed, first one to rise.
That's right. That's how it is. And, dude, Powell was just – I mean, it was just – it was an enlightening thing. Gosh, and you didn't, we paid you like $40. I mean, just hardly anything. I couldn't believe, Troy got mm-hmm. you for us and mm-hmm. he said, man, pal, come to work for you.
I think
$40 or $50.
Man, I think when I started with you, you paid me $5 or $10 more show than what Owen was paying me.
Right, right.
And you gave me, you know, a percentage of the merch that I
sold. Yeah, 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 right.
You know,
right.
So as a college kid, I think at that point I had gone back to A&M after failing out a couple times.
Right.
I'd gone back and, you know, man, at the end of the night, I made $100.
Yeah, right.
And all of my friends that had other jobs in College Station, whether it was waiting tables or, you know, working at the, you know, the bank or whatever it was.
Right.
Man, they'd make like $7.50 an hour.
Sure.
And they'd work 8 hours a day, and they'd make $56.
Yeah, right,
man,
right.
I'd go hang out with my friends and drink some beer and, you know.
Watch a Keen show.
Watch there. A Keen show, and I'd make $100.
I know. And plus, the other real hidden thing on that is that you're going on the weekends. Mm-hmm. So if you weren't working, you would stay home and spend $100 going out Friday and Saturday night.
Sure.
You'd go out to eat. You go to a bar. You go to a show. You spend. As the road manager, you go out Friday, you go out Saturday, you wake up Monday morning, and you're plus $150.
Absolutely.
Whereas if you just stayed home, man, you'd be negative $100. So that sounds kind of, but there really is a hidden margin there. I go, man, you're really almost like $250 up because you're not mm-hmm. spending any money, you're making money. And that's kind of a hit because it doesn't sound like a lot when you just say, man, I made $100 and a couple hundred bucks this weekend. You're like, man, but I didn't spend. I'm up, mm-hmm. and now I got $200 to get me through the week for the next round of gigs. You know, it works. It can work.
My last couple of years of college, you know, when I went back to A&M, I lived with my roommate and part-time
The great
part-time merch guy, security, if you will.
One.
Jacob Ryan Mulliken.
A.K.A.
Big Jake. That's correct. Some of the P2FB fans will remember Big Jake from many of the gigs.
A lot of Pritchett gigs, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great poker player in his own right as well.
Indeed he is.
So Jake and I lived together, and he graduated, I guess, a year before I did. It took him 5 years, took me six.
Right.
But he moved up to Dallas, and I realized, like, man, you know, here I am in college, and by the time I was graduating, you know, we were really booming with P2FB. We were playing all the time.
Right.
Man, I actually could afford to keep our little two-bedroom duplex without a roommate, mm-hmm. you know, because of – you know, the amount that I was working, I'd already networked a bunch. If we took the weekend off, you and Hallie and the girls went somewhere, then, man, I'd go pick up and work with Chris Wall or Ingram or Roger, whoever.
Right.
And, you know, so, man, it paid the bills. And then finally I realized, you know, I think I knew pretty early on after doing that in some shape or fashion, this was what I was going to do for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and that he has done, folks. So let me tell you what. Once the word gets out that, hey, man, that guy that works for Pritchett, dude, is on time, under budget, and gets things done, you move up very fast. So in our next segment here, I want to talk about some, man, we have just an infinite that would cover weeks and weeks of shows.
Absolutely.
Little run-ins, funny things, little stories. I want to see just without even, we haven't done any prep for this show. I always just sit people down, run the mics, see what little things come to mind for Jordan Powell at his time with Phil Pritchett and the full band. We'll tell a few war stories and talk about some little things that happened on the road that he remembers when we continue talking with Texas road manager Jordan Powell next. Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Go to philpritchett.com, download all of our songs. You know you can buy the drop card for $20. I'll mail it to you myself. You get the drop card, $20. You can download every album we've ever made. That's 12 albums for you scoring at home. Or you can go to p2tunes.com, download any one of our 12 records for just $4. Buy the new Fans and Romans Countrymen t-shirt we got on the website. Or come record here at Trinidad World Recording. It's what we do. 817-733-5256. Well, my original great road manager and good friend, Jordan Powell, is here taking time off from his current gig, road managing Miranda Lambert all over the world. He has stopped by here to do the podcast today. Thanks for coming in, Powell.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Catching up, talking about how Powell got going in the business for all you aspiring road managers out there. But now we're into the second segment. I want to go back to those years, and this was probably what? When did you come on with us? About 2003, somewhere in there, maybe?
Man, no, it was even earlier than that. It would have been, I think, 2002.
Okay, end of 2002.
You know? When did you come back from Nashville?
I came back in 2000. I bought the house 2002, January 2002.
Okay, so it would have been like spring, April.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay, spring 2002. Had Tougher Than the Rest. We'd already done that. That it must be just coming out right around then.
Yes, it was recorded, and I did all the CD releases.
That's right. Okay, that's probably right. So we start playing those a lot probably in May.
I mean,
April and
Stolle
May.
And Lynch were in.
Right.
I knew Lynch. Stolle, I had seen Blind Luck a couple times, but, you know, didn't know him, and went out and did a weekend with you when Owen was off. Troy couldn't cover it or something, and we did the Firehouse, and we did El Campo, Greek Brothers.
Greek Brothers, El Campo.
And, man, you know, just instantly it was, I think between all of us, it just kind of felt like, you know, a great place to
be.
We
did, man. The four of us really got along very, very well. It was a lot of great chemistry there for a lot of years. When you think back on your time here, given all your other experience with Kreger and Ingram and Miranda,
sure.
You look at those 3 years. Is there a PG-13 rated story or idea or a couple things that float to the surface your time that seem to mark, that seem to just, you know, characterize your time with Phil Pritchett and the full band?
You know,
I'm
just
curious to hear for myself.
The caricatures of everyone, you know, the four of us that were in that band,
yeah.
We all developed like characters of ourselves.
Yes.
And, you know, like just remembering Greek Brothers right there, just
yeah.
sitting down, the four of us at a table. And, you know, this gig, it's in El Campo, Texas. Not a lot in El Campo, Texas.
Right.
But this restaurant is amazing.
Yeah.
And they feed
food.
You very well.
George, the Greek guy owns it.
Yes. Yeah. And his
George.
Son. Yeah.
Right.
So I remember going to this gig, and I'm thinking, man, they serve oysters in El Campo, Texas.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, well, you know what? We'll try them. Let's give it a whirl. So we sit down, and by the time we get up, I think the four of us have gone through like 9 dozen oysters.
And Ryan Lynch having...
Four?
Maybe 4 dozen or so?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, that just took on, for the next 2.5 years in the band, Ryan Lynch was the,
the
oyster-eating, gambling, drunk...
Yeah, right.
Over-educated party guy.
That's right. And all of our emails and things on the website would reflect that.
Yes.
We even started talking about how he was a good card player. He was on the poker tour. People would go up to the gigs and say, is Ryan really
horse racing
touring?
Aficionado?
Yeah. Running for public office.
Yes.
And, of course, the one of the best gags was it was every gig was Ryan Lynch's birthday. Of course, all you fans out there know that who from way back. I guess it really was his birthday one show. And I said, hey, everybody, it's Ryan's birthday. Of course, when I say that, people start throwing money.
Shots
of money.
Plenty.
They start throwing cash and liquor on the stage. I'm like,
yes.
Well, that's a good thing to have happen.
Absolutely.
So so I said, well, the next day, I'm not going to say it was birthday yesterday. I just said, man, you know, what's the big deal? I said, it's his birthday, everybody. Woohoo! Same deal.
Yes.
Free food, free booze, free money pouring onto the stage. And so then after that, I said, man, I wonder how many shows we could play where I just casually mentioned, hey, by the way, it's Ryan's birthday. And so we just kept doing it for like a year. And it wasn't until we started hitting some of the markets the second time around, the Firehouse, the Surf Club, just, hey, wait a minute, this is his birthday like 3 months ago.
Right.
And you kind of wink at the crowd and suddenly everybody's in on the joke. And we carried it on for the whole, Ryan Lynch, it's his birthday over there. Ah, you know, and everyone was in on the joke. It was kind of just a, you were either in the know or you weren't.
Right.
And we seem to have all kinds of stuff like that.
Absolutely.
Going on, fun stuff.
Well, and you know, that's one of the things in every band, more so in this band than anyone that I've been in
you
probably
mean that?
Before or since.
Oh,
it was.
That means a lot.
You know, man, those inside jokes carry you through, you know. When you can laugh at yourself and you crack yourself up.
And your gigs,
man,
and everything, yeah.
On the days when 12 people show up, or on the days when you just are in, you know, a vehicle for 10 hours and you're so ready to get out and kill everyone in there.
Right.
You know, those are the things, the little humor that gets you through those.
We had the visor in the van there with numerous clippings up there. We had ranked all the Texas music bands. Like you're ranking the college top 20.
Right.
Because we got in an argument, kind of, I can't remember who it was. There was something like,
Pat's not as big as Ragweed.
Do you think Coup de Grace would outdraw Django Walker? Man, he's, I don't know, man. He's going to do it. Oh, come on. Mm-hmm. Coup de Grace. If Coup de Grace is Notre Dame, Django Walker is Florida State.
Well, you know, and I need to give credit where credit is due. Aside from being, you know, a wonderful drummer and showman,
yes.
Jason Stolle did a wonderful job at the Phil Pritchett and the full band record keeping. He always had his little yellow tablet that he would use to work on his crosswords.
Yeah.
And man, anytime that we made a bet, anytime that we would, you know, start a top 10 or a list or something, Stolle would record it.
The other thing, too, you didn't really have in the early aughts, you really didn't have much internet access.
Not much.
So the thing was, we always got in arguments about things, like, dude, you know, whoever, you know, that guy, you know, whatever. Eddie George did not win the Heisman Trophy. Just, dude, yes, he did. Just how much you want to bet? And so you would have to call somebody.
Yep.
So we would call one unwittingly Troy Johnson, who was then working an office job for like speaking things or something.
Yeah.
He was an agent for some sort of, if you wanted to hire a public speaker. Mm-hmm. So we would call either Troy or my brother, John Pritchett, would be there.
Jeremy Elliott was in the mix.
Jeremy Elliott. We had several people who would get phone calls at their office. Just, oh my God, what? Just like go online, DallasCowboys.com. Who was the first round pick of the 1999 draft? You know, just whatever. Mm-hmm. We have some, okay, give me a minute. Why are you calling me right now? We're just driving the Corpus or whatever we're doing for our gigs. And just all kinds of, I mean, there was a million things.
Well,
like
you know,
that.
And
a
if I can, things. If I can expand on that, I remember the day that I upgraded to a new phone.
Yeah.
And as I'm walking out, they said, well, you know, man, we have these new phones. This is before Blackberries or iPhones or anything.
Yeah, right, right.
We have these new phones that you can actually, you know, you can get on the internet through the phone. And I went,
yeah,
I need
that.
So, man, that was like the last year that I think I was on the road with you guys. And
right.
I could check my email on it. And, you know, I could kind of look things up and get some kind of answer. And then I remember realizing that I could get on ESPN, and ESPN would have those game casts.
Yeah, yeah.
So anytime we were in Arkansas and the, you know, A&M football game went on, or the UT game, and I distinctly remember one, we were playing the Red Moon in Ennis.
Yeah.
And this is a great two-pronged story here, but UT is playing like Northwest Missouri State.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like not even televised, and you know, unfortunately, I was the only Aggie in the van among three, you know, rather big Longhorn fans.
Indeed, indeed.
And so I begrudgingly dial it up, and I get, you know, the ESPN game cast, and we're in between sets, and I'm just calling out each play as it'll pop up. Just Cedric Benson rushed up the middle for a touchdown, and Lynch will just do a somersault in the van or something. And I remember, you know, the Red Moon was a great Texas country gig.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, we were a Texas rock band, so to speak.
It was more
so
of a country place,
kind of a square peg, round hole.
Sure.
But, man, we had our contingent wherever we went that would come out. But, you know, then there were some fans that we would convert and some fans that would just give us that deer in the headlight look.
Sure.
So I remember we were all four sitting in the van in a break in between sets. Jason Stolle is in the front seat, smoking out the window. The window is down. And this cowboy guy walks out of the front of the Red Moon. And he's on his cell phone. And we're kind of listening. And he's like, hey, man, I'm over here at the Red Moon. No, man, don't come up here. No, I'm serious, man. They got a band tonight, and they suck. And we all kind of look at each other, and we're like, man, was there an opening band or something? No, it wasn't an opener.
No, he's talking about us.
And we're like, man, maybe we misunderstood him. And he's like, no, man. I mean, seriously,
understand.
I'll meet you somewhere else. Don't come up here.
For God's sake,
these guys suck. I mean, they're terrible.
And I distinctly remember that.
Just the window rolls up.
Zoop. Yeah.
Man, what's happening in the game? Oh, yeah, Texas is, ball was intercepted.
Man, they're heading up. They're doing all right.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, just numerous, too numerous. Well, something everybody will remember. I, as Jordan, we got on a kick there. One of the big parts of the show for a while. Anybody who's seen Jordan Powell, of course, you got your hair short now, but you used to have kind of the long blonde hair.
Sure.
And,
the Dutch boy, as Miranda referred to it when I first went to work
for it. So we decide one time, we always do a Tom Petty song or two. We decide, man, you know, pal, if you had like a big old hat on, some sunglasses, you'd look just like Petty. Hell, man, you could pass for him if you were sitting out at the, you know, out at some show somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So pal's like, you know, pal could play the guitar. And so we said, hey, man, why don't we'll just start playing a Petty song. And then, pal, you just come out with the stovepipe hat. We had the big hat.
Yeah, Stolle, for some reason,
don't come around here no more.
Stockpiled
hat.
A stovepipe foam hat. I don't know where he.
Who else has that on hand? Jason
I don't know. It's like, you know, you ask for the most random thing.
Yeah.
And Stolle's like, oh, I've got one of those.
I have one of those.
Then we found a vest at Goodwill or something.
Got a vest and some sunglasses. You kind of like the cigarette in the corner of the mouth. And you'd come walking out, and I wouldn't say anything. Like I always made a point not to say, "Hey, everybody, look, it's Tom Petty," because I wanted to capitalize on just the excitement, the unease in the crowd, the humor.
Sure.
And it was always fascinating because we'd start playing, and they'd do Mary Jane's Last Dance or something. And all of a sudden, Pal would just kind of come walking out and plug in his acoustic guitar and kind of wave at the crowd. And I'd say something like, oh, hey, look who's here or something. And if you were playing a big festival like we were playing...
Chili Fest, man.
Yeah.
I thought we were going to get, like, mobbed.
People thought it was petty, man.
Yes,
I mean, you get guys who maybe don't go to a lot of shows, sitting way in the back, been drinking all day. All of a sudden, freaking petty's on stage. And you and me, we'd go out in front of the monitors on the apron and just do the solo.
Guitars
the
in the
back
air.
Back to back. Oh, yeah,
singing on the same mic. You know what's really funny? I can't remember if I told you this or not, but, you know, about... 8 months later, I'm on the road with Ingram somewhere, and Jack had come out to the merch table to sign some stuff, and some guy said, man, did you used to work with Phil Pritchett? And I said, yeah, man, worked with Phil for a long time. He said, man, I saw that guy in Fayetteville, Arkansas, and, man, Tom Petty showed up to his gig. I said, oh, really? Yeah, man, Petty showed up and played, like, two songs with him. I'm like, hey, man, you never know. Phil's a connected guy, man.
Yeah, he gets around very well.
Let the legend live.
Let the legend live.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, dude, and one of the great – then once you started working for Jack, we pulled up at a Keen's deal in
Hendersonville, Texas.
Hendersonville, the big crater out there. And so we're catching up. Hey, what's going on, man? So we had ahead of time. I said, hey, man, I think we still got that. We still had that box, man. You carried all your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so we had the Petty hat. We still had it all in the van. I said, hey, pal, man, we got all the stuff in there. If we do the Petty song, you want to come out? You go, yeah, sure. So we go out there playing in the afternoon. Sure enough, we start doing it.
A couple thousand people.
We start doing bound. All of a sudden, Petty comes out, a crowd. And this was like early in the show. There had been some other bands, but this was like the first time the crowd had seemed like it really kind of came to life.
The lights had just come on.
Yeah, and I feel like, man, we really. So I was watching some other, like, man, the crowd's kind of just sitting out there.
Uh-huh.
So we got them going, man. They got them going, And I look over to the right side of the stage, and there's Jason Boland and Jack and Pete and everybody, and everybody's just laughing, like, And then I looked at the other side of the stage, and there's our host, just Robert Earl Keen. Just
stone-faced
aviators, just arms folded, not smiling, just standing all by himself, no one next to him. And I look over there, I'm just like, oh man, we're just pissing off Keen here,
You know, just making a mockery artistic festival.
So later on, we had to run another gig, and Keen was just over there eating some barbecue by himself. I'd never talked to him very much. I mean, I'd met him several times, but always sort of a quiet guy, not to be disturbed too much.
A bit surly at times.
So I go up to, I just said, Robert, my name's Phil Pritchett. I just played up there. I just want to thank you for having us out. We enjoyed it. Thanks so much. And he kind of looks up and he sticks his hand out. We shake hands and I said, by the way, I hope we didn't just bring down the integrity of your event by rolling out Tom Petty and a cheap gag out there. And Keen just, man, I'll never forget, he just smiles. He goes,
giggles.
Are you kidding, man? He goes, I love a cheap gag. He goes, that's the only reason I got up on the stage to watch, man, is I heard Petty was out there.
Yes.
And I was like, well,
yes.
Sorry for the cheap gag. He goes, no, I love a cheap gag, man. He goes, it got me running up there. I loved it. So he was very, very, very cool. That was a big moment for me, man.
Uh-huh.
Just how Petty just... you know, united me and Robert Earl Keen there.
Yeah.
Just for 1 second. Well, man, how many shows like this could we do?
Several. I mean, at that time, we were probably playing about 120, 130 shows
like that,
a year.
125.
So for 2.5 years,
yeah.
Man, I mean, it's upwards of 300 shows together, you know?
Yeah. And course, I mean, I remember, man, if Pal said he was going to be at my house to get in the van at 10 o'clock, man, it 9:58. I was just like,
two more minutes. Come on. You want some coffee?
Yeah,
no,
sit
Phil,
down.
I have coffee in the car. I've
ready
already
to go,
got it.
Ready to go. Yeah. Yeah. Well, man.
Black, two sugars.
Well, man, the road with Jordan Powell, man, it's treated him well ever since. He is now out there with Miranda Lambert. You stuck your face on Jay Leno and the Grammys. You've been around. You've been on all those shows. I'm always looking for Powell in the wings, and there he is with his blonde hair. Or his, you know. Yeah, I saw Miranda throw the guitar. What show was that on?
That was the CMA Awards, Madison Square Garden, 2005.
Pal texted me and he goes, check it out, man. She's doing the Pritchett move, man, where she throws the Telecaster across the stage and I run out on the stage and catch it. Be watching. I was like, all right. Sure enough, I tuned on.
Mm-hmm.
Or I might have gone to see it on YouTube the next day and saw the guitar throw and the catch. And I was like,
which we have now retired because, you know, man, everything... if you steal something, make sure it hadn't been, you know, like,
sure,
been done recently.
Right,
like, you go
right,
cover
right.
a song, man, we did that.
Yeah.
And like the next year on the CMAs, like two people are throwing guitars. I'm like, really? Really? I just wanted to go Jason Stolle on them and, you know, just kind of walk up and explain. You can't do that.
We did that first. That's right.
We stole it from Springsteen.
Yeah,
that
right.
counts.
And Phil Pritchard did it for a long time. Then we stole it from him. And
right.
that's it.
Right.
That's the way it goes, man. Well, man, we're talking about Petty. Oh, boy. Well, I was asking Powell, and he's been listening to it a lot. He's been, thankfully, he's been driving around a lot by himself here over the holidays, you know, here at the end of the year. He just goes, dude, I've been on a huge Petty kick. Of course, we've done some Petty albums in the vault, but I think we've only done Southern Accents. I think that's the only one we've done.
It's a good one.
Great record. But we're gonna take a good look at Tom Petty's great record, Hard Promises, in the P2 Vault when we come back. Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It's Phil Pritchard here on the P2 Podcast. Join us every week, philpritchard.com, or listening worldwide on radiofreetexas.org and everywhere else, every other radio station that carries the P2 Podcast. We thank you all. Well, my guest here is Jordan Powell, road manager for Phil Pritchard and the Full Band, a road manager extraordinaire, showing up at 6 in the morning with coffee, a full van, a guy that if you're on stage, I would just look over and say, do you have an Allen wrench, a pair of pliers, and some fingernail clippers? He just presents them right then. The king of scurrying out onto the stage, taping down the cables, always had like a flashlight. You had a sense for everything, man.
Man, do you have a can of compressed air, some cuticle glue,
that's right,
and a bottle of Jameson? Yes, I do.
And George, he's always ready, loaded for bear, ready to go at anything. Well, in the vault here, we always look at the rack of vinyl records here on the wall at Trinidad World Recording. Couldn't look past Hard Promises, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, 1981. You ever heard our version? We used to do a version of The Waiting. Did you hear us do The Waiting?
If memory serves, during my time, you would do The Waiting in a solo break.
Yeah,
we'd
come out. Down. Usually like an encore type thing if something was just where they wouldn't
You'd
let
play
me get
one
off stage.
Solo, let Stolle smoke a cigarette,
yeah.
Lynch drink four or five beers quickly, and then we'd come back and
do a few more.
Do a couple more, yeah.
So what strikes you about this? You said you've been listening to a lot of Petty.
Hard Promises. Man, a lot of it. Hard Promises is one that, you know what? I'll go back and I'll listen to records, and I'll put them down for a while, and I'll come back. Lately, the thing that has been striking me is the unbelievable play of Benmont Tench.
Yes, keyboard player Hammond B3 organ.
Hammond B3 organ and, you know.
Piano.
There are things that define sounds. Undoubtedly, Mike Campbell's guitar playing has always defined Petty. But, you know, going back, especially after watching, the Petty documentary, Running Down a Dream,
three-part series. You can get it.
Everyone needs to go buy it.
Or if you can't buy it, just, I know, I got it on Netflix. They sent all the discs together, and I just stayed up all night and watched the whole thing,
yes,
man.
Absolutely.
Documentary on Petty and the Heartbreakers. Yeah, dude, Benmont Tench on keys. Of course, you had Mike Campbell on guitar.
Absolutely.
This was, of course, Stanley Lynch on the drums.
Yep.
And Ron Blair, bass guitar. The Heartbreakers, man. Of course, you got The Waiting kicking it off. Then She's a Woman in Love. The Night Watchman. Very underrated Petty song.
Yep. Insider.
The Insider. Now, that is my favorite song on this album.
Is it?
Duet with Stevie Nicks.
Absolutely.
You got a dangerous background.
Great, great song.
There's
but
a great
yeah, you know, going back and listening to that stuff, first of all, a record, and this goes back to our time in the van. You know, I was a big fan of the band and big fan of Van Morrison and some of the, you know, the older rock, but the rock that was kind of on the fringe. It had the country influence.
Right.
It's still, you know, it's still what gets me every time.
Sure.
But, you know, going back and listening to those records, some of those don't stand up against modern day recording. It sounds really dated. You know, people try, oh man, we're going to go for this new sound, and it doesn't work out. You know, Petty's early records still sound so good.
Right.
I can still listen to them and go, man, I'm going to go produce this kid, and I want to use this guitar tone that Mike Campbell came up with in 1981.
Right, right, right.
Or, man, I want to use this drum sound. It's as fresh now as it was then.
That's right. You produced by Jimmy Iovine, of course, the record mogul. You know, he also produced Dan the Torpedoes.
Yes.
A couple of those Petty records back then. Always butted heads with Petty, you know, as it happens. But man, together they were able to produce some. I heard they've got this because they got the new live Petty anthology out.
Yes,
which is like all his greatest songs.
The Super Highway
live version.
Yeah.
Like the vinyl box is like 8 vinyl records or something you can buy for like $180.
Mm-hmm.
And supposedly, I don't know if it's true, but I heard on the radio this guy said that. They went back and selected whatever version of the live to use on this collection. And yeah, and Petty said literally he sat and listened to 170 versions of American Girl.
Right.
To decide on which one to put. So whatever it was, you know, just like, and the winner is 1979 at the Fillmore.
Yep.
Or whatever it was. I couldn't believe that. I was like, man. That's something I don't have in me. I could not sit and listen to, I don't know, Maria 180 times and tell you which one was better than I'd be like, oh, man. I don't know. I don't know what Petty has in him that keeps him going. That's a selective trait, man.
Actually, I think the version of Maria that would have undoubtedly had to have been included on the Phil Pritchett anthology would have been Poor David's Pub circa 2003 when you took half of your solos standing on a chair.
Yes.
Fell off said chair, face first.
Yeah.
Got up, took the second half of your solo standing on the ground this time.
Indeed.
And continued rocking.
Thank you. I was trying to do, yes, I had the chair. The chair was on the floor, and there was, of course, the small stage. Mm-hmm. And my plan, I looked back, I said, man, I'm going to do the cool.
Surf the chair.
Tip the chair over onto the stage and then walk onto the stage.
Yes.
And as it tipped, it just that chair just slid out.
Yes.
It just like shot across the floor into the crowd. And I just was suspended in midair, just like like the coyote, just my legs, just turning, just with my guitar, just flat down.
Yes.
Someone brought that up to me at a show recently. Say, man, the last episode you Poor David's, man, you were just suspended in midair, flying off the chair.
But, you know, man, as we mentioned, and to circle back, you know, you watch Petty live.
Yeah.
And there's always things that make, you know, like the band are all laughing at each other at.
Right, right.
And part of that is what goes into making an amazing live show, which I feel like we always had.
Yeah,
you know?
I think that's right, yeah.
So, and, you know, if you have fun on stage and you have fun making the music, it undoubtedly is going to be good.
Right,
you
right.
Know?
It's contagious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, Petty, I always struggled with Petty a little bit because he's such an easy guy to love, really. I mean, everything, it seems like everything he does is good. And early on, it seems like he's very unabashedly derivative. He's almost a secondary influence. You'd almost, you know, I mean, he was influenced so much by the Beatles and the Birds and Dylan and stuff.
Sure.
And so he kind of go, well, Petty, he's not what I would call maybe a primary influence, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely.
You know, you kind of say, man, you can't be influenced by Petty. You'd have to say you're influenced by Dylan.
Sure.
I mean, I'm just kind of, he's kind of an offshoot of that almost. But, man, I think as years go by, and you see him play the Super Bowl. And we went and saw him play at American Airlines Center about a year ago.
Oh, cool.
And And man, you just, I think when you get to where he is, when you're, you know, 60 years old or so, and you've been around that long, and you've been able to do it that well, that much good music, man, you start to just, you just become equal to the Byrds or Dylan or whatever.
Sure.
You're just your own entity, and, mm-hmm. and it's no longer like, oh, he's kind of a secondary influence. I mean, he really becomes a primary, well, you know, a primary
and
then, guy.
And part of that, I think, you know, now that we look back on those records and realize how groundbreaking they were, because nothing else really sounded like that.
Right, that's right.
But then when you get into records that just, like, you know, Wildflowers, that
yeah.
just stop you dead in your tracks.
That's right.
Man, you realize that, you know, you're in the present, you're witnessing mm-hmm. genius in our generation.
You really are. I mean, and he's not unlike a Neil Young or somebody. I mean, he, you know, Wildflowers, Petty's late 80s albums, Let Me Up, I've Had Enough, some stuff like that, you know, failed to really, you know, plow any new ground.
Right.
I think it's safe to say Wildflowers is a real rebirth, mm-hmm. man.
You know what?
It was kind of unexpected, kind of like, this is his new album. You're like, whoa, you know.
It was dangerous ground for him, too, because, you know, he had the most commercial success he had ever had with Full Moon Fever.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so here he
comes.
So is
this the follow-up? This is the follow-up.
Well, I think End of the Great Wide Open was next.
Maybe that's right.
But,
yeah,
you know, here he is with two, and that was also widely commercially successful. Here he is. He's got to go make a record. Mm-hmm. And, you know, guys like that are not happy making the same record they just made.
Right, right.
You know, A&R goes, man, we need another, you know, Free Fallin', yeah, man. Yeah, give us another Free Fallin'.
Right.
They don't want to do that. They want to go make something new to them.
Right.
And, you know, he was treading on really dangerous ground because if he made a record that didn't sell, then all of a sudden, you know, he's washed up and he's, you know,
he's
done and all of that. Mm-hmm. And he made an artistically beautiful, great sounding, you know, legendary record.
Right.
And
produced by Rick Rubin.
He
was on a hot streak mm-hmm. in those days. You know, he did Johnny Cash's comeback album and
yeah, had done the Beastie Boys.
It was a great call, man. It was just a great moment and you know, some 10 years after Hard Promises, you know, 81. It just shows that, you know, you just have those moments, man. Any artist is just going to have those singular works. If you're lucky, you're going to have one early and one in the middle and one maybe at the end of your career. Of course, any fan's going to love all your stuff, but there are those singular moments, man. And Wildflowers is definitely one. And I would argue going back, of course, Dan the Torpedoes is back there.
Sure.
Hard Promises, maybe not up there with Dan the Torpedoes, but right there, I think there's a lot of stuff on Hard Promises. Like we said, Insider, a lot more subtle stuff.
It's a little more overlooked in the Petty catalog.
It really is. It really
but,
is.
But, you know, some of those records.
But The Waiting is one of my favorite Petty songs. It kicks
absolutely.
Off the album, man, just that guitar, just down on and on. It's just one of the best Petty moments,
yep.
I mean, for me, ever. So check that out. Produced by the great Jimmy Iovine. Hard Promises, 1981. Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Well, our guest has been Jordan Powell, road manager for Phil Pritchett and the full band for 3 years. So many stories. We could just go on and on, show after show, with just numerous humorous incidences,
mm-hmm.
anecdotes. Thanks for being here today, my friend.
Anytime.
Good luck with Miranda and all the gang out on the road, all our good friends out there, Aiden and Alex Whedon. Take care of all those guys.
We'll try.
Go to philpritchett.com for every Pritchett need of yours. Download any of our records for $4 a piece, or just buy the drop card or a t-shirt. You know what happens when you order that t-shirt? I personally stuff it in an envelope, and I sign the envelope, Powell, and I just mail it to your door. You know, who else can do that? It's a cottage industry, my friend.
I know. I agree.
That's what it is. So just know that. When you order something off the website, the personal touch is always there. Well, thanks for joining us on the P2 Podcast. Join us next Wednesday. We will be posting yet another insightful, humorous, fun show. A ride through Texas music history and a look at the Texas music future. Thanks for listening to the podcast, and we will see you all next week. Take care.
Everything you dreamed of. Yeah, you're the dark.
Yeah, you'll become his legacy. His quiet world of white and gold.